Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy news for conservatives today, as usual. The good is a bit of a stretch. Jim, it was Election Day 2009. You and I, I'm sure, both went to the polls in Virginia and proudly pushed the button for Republican nominee Bob McDonnell for most of his term. We were pretty pleased with his performance. Towards the end, he raised taxes and did some other things that didn't make us very happy, but it was only towards the very end of his term that we learned about allegations. He had gotten gifts in exchange for Johnny Williams Sr., the head of Star Scientific, to use the governor's mansion and the power of the governor's office in some ways to advance his businesses. It all played out in very tawdry tabloid-style fashion in a federal court in Virginia over the past few weeks. And then on Thursday, we got the verdict, 11 convictions for Bob McDonnell, 9 for his wife, Maureen. Normally, that would result in about a 30-year prison sentence if he fails in his appeal. It looks like it'll be less than that. But Jim, obviously a crashing to earth of a once-rising political star. The good news here is that unlike the way that most Democrats rally around even the most scurrilous of accusation against their folks, conservatives and Republicans were never doing that in this case. It seemed like for the most part, they simply wanted to see justice done.
Yeah. Look, it's one of those things where I think it was JFK had said sometimes party loyalty asks for too much. Even if Bob McDonnell had been a terrific governor, and I think that, as you said, the record was mixed. It was a great start. And things went pretty wrong towards the end. Just the behavior here is pretty shameful and troubling. Among them, that he was willing to turn himself into a walking billboard for this supplement company. The guy had donated a lot of money to his campaign, but they just kept giving him gifts. And it's just not plausible that the McDonald's didn't realize that this was wrong. And if you get gifts, you're supposed to, you know, disclose them. And the idea of, well, it wasn't really a gift to me. It was a gift to my wife and to my daughter. And it just doesn't pass the smell test. The whole legal defense was based upon, well, yeah, I took all the gifts and I really should not have, I didn't report any of them, but you can't prove that there was a quid pro quo, so it's not really corruption. In retrospect, it's kind of amazing that that was the defense and he didn't take the plea deal, which would have had him pleading guilty to one felony account and his wife would have walked. And Bob McDonnell turned it down. I think a lot of people look at that, you know, besides being an egregious misjudgment on his part. You know, you kind of wonder about a husband who wouldn't want to spare his wife the risk of jail time. We will see exactly what the sentencing brings out. There are certain times at which behavior is just not acceptable in a public official. And it's kind of pleasing that a lot of Republicans did not know. There weren't a lot of people who are rushing to the aid of the McDonald's and insisting this. I have seen a few folks on Twitter doing this who I'm kind of surprised by, but I'll settle that with them offline, shall we say. But just one kind of, you know, a good example of this is that, you know, members of his staff were asking questions and saying, this doesn't look right. We're not supposed to be having corporate events in the governor's mansion and things like this. And the McDonald's did not listen to their staff. And so, you know, when you're defying your staff and the good judgment of everybody around you, it's really hard to feel sympathy. We expect more from our lawmakers. That's what we got, and McDonald's going to pay the consequence for that.
Jim, there may be some of our liberal listeners listening to this and suggesting, once upon a time we were talking about John Edwards, I believe in the reaction to his scandal of the love child while his wife had cancer and then denying it and saying his aide had fathered the child and so forth, that Democrats who voted for John Edwards should sit out a cycle or two. I'm not sure the sleaziness rises close to that scandal, but what should be the takeaway here for conservatives and Republican voters?
If for somebody wanted to throw that at me, I'd make two observations. One is that the skeeviness of John Edwards was out long before the specifics of the affair and things like that. And when he insisted, well, I did have the affair, but that child isn't mine. And then he came back later on. Oh, actually, yes, it was my. There were a lot of signs that there was trouble there with John Edwards. And I think there was kind of some willful blindness on the part of lots of other folks. With McDonnell, I think one of the reasons this is such a shocker of a story is that this was involving their personal finances, which is the sort of things that are, you know, not kind of out in the open for lots of people. You know, apparently they were in tougher financial straits than they ever let on. And as a result of that, were willing to just, you know, take these gifts and develop this very inappropriate I should emphasize inappropriate financial relationship with this wealthy Richmond supplement maker, not an inappropriate physical relationship, although there's some talk of, you know, Mrs. McDonald having a crush on him and things like that. Ultimately, we just all assumed that the McDonalds were doing okay. And what's kind of mind-boggling is, look, a retired governor usually gets to, you know, when they leave office, they usually go on some corporate board, they might get a K Street gig, they teach a class, they write a book. You know, once you're a retired governor and unindicted, unconvicted retired governor, usually you have quite a few opportunities to make good money. So the idea that that McDonald's just, you know, they were living rent free in the governor's mansion. Why were they in such, you know, desperate straits financially? Doesn't quite add up and make sense. I think it says something about greed on their part. It makes them, you know, an even less sympathetic figure in the middle of all this. And so the one thing which is a good, you know, think cautionary note for those of us on the right, or really all over the political spectrum, is look, you never really know a political figure. You don't know what they're like behind closed doors. You don't know what's really going on in their life. And you just kind of take it on faith that everything is going okay. And ultimately, there's going to be days where it's, you know, ones where it's not okay. And you have some very bad behavior on that part. And, you know, just put your faith in the people, you know, personally. I would urge people, you know, politicians, you hire them to do a job. They're not there to be your saviors, to be messiahs, to be anything like that. So.
Best tweet of the day was Terry McAuliffe is probably buying very nice gifts for his chef right about now. So,
there's to give a couple little bit of credit to Terry McAuliffe, his statement was not gloating, was not neener neener neener. It was actually a very sympathetic and kind of, you know, sensitive to the moment, saying this is an awful day for Virginia and an awful day for McDonald's and my thoughts and, you know, like, it was interesting. Even though he didn't, you know, shy away that they had done something wrong. But there was no gloating there. And so, you know, credit has to be given to Terry McAuliffe for that. Considering the Kerry precedent we've set, McAuliffe will then really irk us sometime in the next 48 hours.
That's exactly right. All right. Quickly on to number two now. And the August job numbers came out on Thursday morning. Here's how it went down on MSNBC with the help of CNBC's Sarah Eisen.
It's a disappointment, a big one. The economy only added, guys, 142,000 jobs during the month of August. Economists were looking for a number above 200,000. 220,000 was the estimate. We only got 142,000.
This is the first bad news we've had in a while, isn't it?
It is the worst. It is actually the worst level of job creation in terms of the monthly number all year long. We were going solid, above 200,000. I guess if you want to say something on the plus side, the unemployment rate did tick down to 6.1%. Still, that could just be a reflection of fewer people working.
Speaking of fewer people working, the labor participation rate, the study also said, 36-year low, Jim, at 62.8%. That translates into over 92,269,000 Americans 16 and over not participating in the labor force in August.
Was that Joe Scarborough saying that's the first bad news we've had in a while?
Yeah.
Because it may have been the first bad news we've had in a while, but we haven't exactly been overflowing with terrific news on the economic front. And I, like a lot of other folks, we kind of contend, look, when the economy is doing well, we're all going to know it. We're all going to feel it. Yes, the stock market is doing pretty well, but I think for most Americans, it'll just be this, you know, this hiring binge, you know, this, you'll see, you know, help wanted signs popping up in the windows of every store you go by. You know, you'll see the storefronts in downtowns filling up pretty rapidly. And it just doesn't seem to be anything remotely like that. There may be some parts of the economy that have rebounded okay, but this does not feel like an era of great prosperity in America, at least not for most of us. I think there's a certain amount of inside-the-bubble mentality in a comment like that. So I understand a lot of listeners to the Three Martini Lunch may strongly suspect this is a rerun. We and I have played this sort of commentary in response to disappointing job numbers before. And so perhaps the best thing is just to keep it short and say, you know what, the economy is still pretty disappointing. And, you know, it's hard to believe that, you know, global chaos overseas is going to do much to help our economy here.
All right. On to the crazy martini now. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the Florida Congresswoman and Chairwoman of the Democratic National Committee, no stranger to the crazy martini. But she gave a speech in Milwaukee referring to the very close governor's race there between Scott Walker and Mary Burke. And here's what she had to say about Scott Walker. Quote, "Scott Walker has given women the back of his hand. I know that is stark. I know that is direct. I know that is reality. What Republican Tea Party extremists like Scott Walker are doing is they are grabbing us by the hair and pulling us back It's not going to happen on our watch. Even the Burt campaign says, I don't think we really want to identify ourselves with that comment. Wasserman Schultz later said she shouldn't have used those words, but said the thrust of her comments about Scott Walker's record towards women remains on the record. And Jim, I guess we shouldn't be surprised, but given the treatment of women we're seeing in other parts of the world and using that language with respect to Scott Walker's policy seems way out of touch.
First of all, it is kind of striking the number of leaders of the Democratic Party who have just conditioned us all to expect really ridiculous, inaccurate, or obnoxious things to be said. And everyone just kind of roll their eyes and say, oh, that's just Debbie being Debbie. That's just Biden being Biden. That's just Pelosi being Pelosi. And that's just Reid being Reid. Almost everybody except Obama has this, you know, record of saying just nutty things. And you got to figure with the we have no strategy, the president is catching up on them. This one is in a different category, though, in the sense that everybody who's got anything resembling a conscience is just kind of appalled by violence against women and wife beating and you know, girlfriend beating and domestic abuse. So to use a metaphor of domestic abuse because you don't like the way Scott Walker does his budget, it trivializes the issue. It is obnoxious. And the fact that there were two separate references, and I understand this is from a prepared remarks, this is not accidental. This was not speaking off the cuff and words came out clumsily or something like that. I mean, this really is a rather desperate attempt to kind of weld the war on women rhetoric to a budgetary fight and to kind of get people to start thinking about Scott Walker in this. And a lot of people had said, look, if it wasn't for very laid-back rules on slander of a public figure, which there probably ought to be, implying in your comments that Scott Walker is a wife beater, you know, in a lot of other contexts, that's actionable, particularly if you do it to a private figure. So pretty appalling, even by the standards of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I guess the only thing we can kind of say is a somewhat silver lining of this is this suggestion that we can say this is not the sign of a confident party. It feels like they're in a great shape for November. They really are pushing it. And the kind of the tone and stuff like that, and just kind of desperately in the, you know, throwing spaghetti up against the wall and hope that it sticks stage of this, which is kind of early to be doing in early September.
Jim, very weird story to end the week, but I guess not too surprising given the source.
Been a weird week.
It certainly has. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend and join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.